All right, it is Wednesday, it is new comic book day, but most importantly, it is TLDR day, baby.
Yes, sir.
Welcome back to Trade 2 of TLDR. I'm your friendly neighborhood backcracker, Dr. Joe, and with me, as always, is my hunk in crime, Friar, my guy. How's it going?
I'm just glad that you're still calling me your guy after what you texted me about following the Christmas ranking episode on hashtag dork.
What fucking movie was that? Who puts that shit on their goddamn list?
Miracle on 34th Street was a staple in the Friar household growing up. My mother loved that movie, and I don't care what anybody says. Like the 90s remake is the one that we watch. I don't think I've ever seen the original, actually.
Originals stink, but I understand you putting that movie on your list if it was, you know, special to you and your mom. So I won't give you too much grief about it, but that movie stinks.
Well, I mean, look, not every movie that's on those lists is of like the greatest quality ever. I don't really care. Like, it's the other thing that I'm bummed that I forgot was Christmas Shoes. That's a movie that is a Hallmark movie. And honestly, Doc, I don't know if you ever heard that song, but that song makes me cry. I haven't listened to it yet, and I don't know if I'm ready for that right now. But yeah, so the movie makes me cry too.
So what the hell? What? Tell me about the Christmas Shoes. I've never heard of the Christmas Shoes. I have obviously never seen the Christmas Shoes. I'm familiar with like Santa Paws and Santa Baby, Christmas Maybe with you know, what's your name there? Pinup Girl of the '90s, Jenny McCarthy. But I've never heard of the fucking Christmas Shoes.
I will tell you more about it off air because I think more people want to hear about the comics that are coming out this week. Maybe we can do a Christmas Shoes special, a DSG Christmas Shoes Facebook special, if anybody else has seen it in the DSG. I would imagine I'm the only one that's seen it, though.
I would say so.
Anyways, we got quite a few announcements this week. And I know obviously there are new releases and whatnot. But the big things where we get a new Batman title, we get a new Superman coming out too, which is kind of akin to the Batman black and white. I think this is Superman red and blue. Okay. And then we have a new Joker title too, which I think I would imagine the Joker title you're most excited about. I'm personally most excited about Batman Urban Legends. Yes. Which one are you looking forward to between those three that are coming out in March?
The only Superman that I'm looking forward to is the Future State stuff. With Sean Lewis, that's going to be great. I've got no real interest in this Superman red and blue. The Joker sounds great, but I think I'm there with you on the Batman one. That looks fantastic.
Yeah. The thing about the Joker one is, of course, your guy James Tynan is writing it, and then Mirka Andolfo is also the artist on this too, or at least one of the artists,
because that is definitely gonna get read for sure, because Tynan is must, and Mirka Andolfo's art is tremendous. She's also
handling Punchline too in all this, which is
awesome. Yeah, so I mean, we just came off of Batman 3 Jokers. I'm hoping we're not going to get just a little too Joker heavy. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking forward to that one as well, for sure.
Well, the Joker series is gonna have to be a little Joker heavy because it is the Joker.
Well, right, but I'm talking about all the Joker stuff that's been
coming out. Oh, in general, you mean? Yes, yes. Fair enough. Okay, but with Batman, with this Batman Urban Legends anthology series, which I believe is a 6-issue series, actually they said it was monthly. In that, again, these all start in March. I'm really excited to see Batman versus Grifter. Yeah. I'm excited to see Batman versus Red Hood too. Yeah. I think this is going to be going to be a good series. It is clockwork with you every single time we record. That watch goes off.
I just got to chuck it. My wife should be wearing it. It was a gift.
Oh,
No, but yeah. So these are the books that are going to, I think, immediately pick up when Future State ends, right? I believe
State
will go January, February, and then boom, we're going to jump right in into all this stuff. So I mean, Tynan's busy because he's still got Batman, you know, going on as well. And so this Joker book's going to be great. Punchline, you know, I love that one-off issue that came out. That was great.
Oh, it was so good. That was we're going to do – Doc and I are planning on doing a holiday special for next week, so we'll get ahead of this. And then the week after, we're planning on doing our annual, and we'll reflect on a lot of the stuff that's come out this past year. Punchline is definitely something that we'll need to touch on because we talked about it a little when it came out, and that was so good.
Yeah, it was tremendous, and I love the character. And remember, we talked about how she's different than Harley Quinn, because I know some people were like, "Well, you know, seems like more of the same," but really, really wasn't. So, Mirka Andolfa is absolutely tremendous. You know, her Mercy series was great. She's, you know, doing more and more with DC now, so I can't wait for this as well.
Which you did talk about during Dorktober, the Mercy series, yeah. And that was one that definitely caught my attention among all the other stuff that you had mentioned. But this week we have, let's see, for Image Comics, Commanders in Crisis issue 3 is out, which I have told you guys I would catch up on that and let you guys know what's going on. Next week for the holiday special, I will report back. I will have read number 2. I will have read number 3 because I am behind on that. And I said it, I'm not really too excited about what's going on with what went on in the first issue, but I will get back to it and let you guys know if maybe it was just the first issue that was a fluke and something that maybe you need to give another chance. I know Kick-Ass versus Hit-Girl issue 2 is out this week, and I'm sure there's some Kick-Ass fans out there, or Hit-Girl fans. I know that's a little more popular. Joe, are there any other Image books that caught your eye?
Yeah, so there was a number 1 that came out this week, Post-Americana, which I haven't had a chance to read yet, but I'm very much looking forward to that. And then Stillwater, number 4. This series has been absolutely awesome. Awesome. And I can't wait to read this one. And it's right up my alley. There's some weird shit going on in this town. The characters are very flawed. Just shit that I love. So this is I can't wait to read this one.
Okay. Now with Boom. Oh, actually, yeah. You had a review for Boom this week, right?
I sure did. Once in Future number 14 came out, and this is definitely one of my favorite issues, especially over the past few months, because I think last time we talked about Once in Future, I said I'm kind of ready for this story to kind of wrap up a bit.
Yeah,
and so what you get in this issue, and you can when it's posted, you'll be able to read my review over on Geeks Worldwide. They take one of the characters, Rose, and they really insert her into the story. Now she's going to be much more involved, and the track that this book is going on now, give me more. I want more. You know, so the art was vicious. The art was fantastic. The storytelling was great. It picked up right where issue 13 left off. So this was a must issue and one of my favorites of this series so far.
So I read your review beforehand. Yeah. I have not read the issue yet, but I saw some of what you mentioned about Rose, and I was surprised because I've been wondering what they're going to do with that character. Obviously, I don't know the full breadth of what they did, but I'm looking forward to reading that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you mentioned that he got violent in this Dan Mora got violent in this issue, but he did the same thing. I think it was in 13 or not
much,
not
12. Much more violent. I talked about his vicious art in this one.
Okay.
I mean,
I guess I wasn't much stuck with me as much. My apologies.
Right from the first few panels, the first several pages of this book, is some vicious, violent art from Dan Mora. And I think it was issue 12 or issue 13 where Grant is shooting the crows. And that was visually jarring and great art.
That was I think that was 13. And yeah. that was the first thing I was writing about. Like, this is a different step in a different direction slightly or a change of course in some way, shape or form for Once in Future. It's very like, okay, like we see Die with Kieran Gillen and obviously different artists, and I'm blanking on who the artist is for that series, but very different. It can get a little more violent, but the colors also are a little different with that story. You go violent here, and it really can change the tone of this story, and I like that they're doing that.
Yeah, right from the rip. Right, I mean, he kicked it up a notch. Bam, as Emma would say.
Yeah.
But it was good. It was one of my favorite books. I don't want to say that it gotten stale over the past several issues, but I was like, okay, what are we doing? Let's try. And then boom, now we're on a road, and they introduce a little wrinkle here that is going to constantly give the character Rose constant suspense, and you'll know what I mean when you read it. It's
okay.
It's absolutely tremendous. And then the other book from Boom, you know the rule. If it's Boom number 1, you pick it up and read it. The Expanse number 1. So I've got it. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. I'm assuming this has to do with the sci-fi series and the of shows that were on TV, but also the books, The Expanse. So I'm looking forward to reading this one as well.
Now, you got a few other For the titles that you're looking at from a few other of the indie companies, what can you roll them out for me real quick?
Yep. So Dark Horse, we've got Cyberpunk 2077. That, of course, from Cullen Bunn, who we interviewed last week. So the Trauma Team 4 of 4 came out this week. So I'm looking up. I'm looking forward to reading up the conclusion on that. From AWA, we have another book that I've been loving, American Ronin number 3, which I will probably be doing on this show somewhere in the near future. Vault, Resonant number 6 came out. So there's been a bit of a hiatus. Issue 5 came out several months ago, and that first arc had wrapped up. So now they're kicking off anew. That's a good, not a horror book, but along that line. And then Aftershock has We Live number 3. This has been a great story so far as well that I also might do on the show down the line.
I know you've been very high on American Ronin, and I'm obviously going to wait till you do an episode on it. But I'm Resonant just because, you know, Revenant when we talked with Adam Lawson. Yes, so it was Revenant. Yeah. But still, when you're talking about Resonant, I'm a little interested in that. And I actually wound up reading Bite Sized ahead of this episode because it came out last week. Of course, that's what we talked about, Cullen Bunn, for the first half of that episode. And I liked it. It's going to be a 4-issue series. I will be. I know you're looking forward to reading it too. You've been having a tough time getting a copy of it. But I ended up getting it, so I'm looking forward to that. There was another book in there at the end that they teased that I may need to look at, and I don't have the comic right in front of me, but I'm curious. Maybe I'll look into that a little bit more. I'm not certain what the audience is, but maybe something that I'll end up doing down the line. But I am going to pick up Cyberpunk 2077 Trauma Team when it comes out in trade form, I think, because obviously the final issue is coming out this week. But, oh, man, the game is having some troubles.
Huh? Yeah, that is tough. You know, I think, you know, because they've delayed it already, and then I think there was just sort of the new gen consoles are coming out. We got to put the game out, and it just wasn't ready to come out. And this is a scenario where I know there's pressure to put the game out, but you're best to keep delaying and put it out when you know that it's what you want it to be. And
annoying.
We're seeing that with the Batman, right? Matt Reeves is Batman, and they've delayed it, and they've had to delay it because of COVID, but there's some other reasons why it's going to be pushed back. Like, that's a movie. Take as much time as you need to make it, because when you release it, I want it to be perfect. Cyberpunk, hold off. Release it when you think it's perfect, not because people want it, because that's when you're going to have the issues.
They've been teasing this thing for so long. I've said anytime it comes up, I thought it's something. I know Cyberpunk in general has been around for a while, but I thought Cyberpunk 2077 is something that had been around for a long time. They've been teasing it for so long. If you're going to do that and make everybody hyper aware of it and make it look like this cool thing, how are you going to screw it up right out the gates? And this is not the first. I don't know if it's the same company. It probably isn't. But we have that company doing that. And then Avengers, I didn't buy that game, but obviously a huge flop. And you own that game, right?
I'm so pissed I bought that. I mean, I got excited because when the beta came out, I was like, okay, let me get my hands on it. I want to play it. So I pre-bought it, pre-ordered it, so I get my hands on the beta. And oh man, I think I've maybe played the game once. I had this grand idea of, all right, we can get guys at the DSG together. We can stream it, you know. And it just, the multiplayer was trash, and just not what I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Arkham Knight, so you got hope for that. Arkham Knight.
Yeah, I got you. You better get a goddamn PlayStation.
I will in time. I'm not in a rush like Keith and Davey and everybody else has been, but I will get one in time. And honestly, it's when that game comes out that I will feel the need to pick it up, because that's the one I'm most excited for. And honestly, Doc, like with the Avengers one, I saw the graphics, like, okay, they're obviously not bad, but like, I feel like these could be a lot better than they are. Like, we're talking about Avengers, Disney, Marvel, your baby. How are these not sharper?
The biggest issue I had with that game was the controls. They were very wonky. You've got games like Batman Arkham City and the Spider-Man game. So I haven't played Miles Morales yet, but the first Spider-Man game that came out a year or so ago, the fighting mechanics in those two games are damn near perfect. It's so fluid. It's so what's the fucking word I'm looking for? But it's just so fluid, right? And you can fight multiple people at the same time, and it's great. And it's, like I said, it's perfect. With this, the camera's off. You're constantly having to move the camera to get, you know, lock on. It was just such a clunky pain in the ass. It's like, I don't got fucking time for this.
And we'll get to Marvel in a second, but first with DC, Death Metal issue 6 is out this week. I have read it. I have reviewed it. It is up on Geeks Worldwide now. Whenever you're listening to this, you can go check that out. I can't wait for the ending. Like the way Scott Snyder has written this has been so impressive. And honestly, like, read the review and you'll see what I'm talking about with this time around. It's just the last few pages. Like, I gotta be careful. So Nightwing 77 also came out this week. And normally this issue would have been like, oh, okay, whatever. But with everything that's gone on this year, it just hit me a little bit differently than I think it normally would. Just with what everybody's kind of dealing with, and then you deal with the nature of this time of year and things that people try to highlight and whatever. So I thought Dan Jurgens did a good job with this. I think he's done as good a job as someone can trying to clean up things with Nightwing. So I'm pleased with what I got in this. And I think that the character has been at least been put on the right course going into Future State and everything, as best as could be done given how long Rick Grayson lasted. Also, Tales from the Dark Multiverse said, if you guys have been reading any of these one-offs, they've been really good. I really enjoyed Flashpoint, and I really enjoyed Hush. Both of those were outstanding. I think this week they have Crisis on Infinite Earths, so I'm sure a lot of people would want to read that one. So again, you can go pick that one up. These are one-offs, as far as I know, and they've been really enjoyable. And then, Doc, this week you had a series you've been reading come to a conclusion, right?
Yep. So Batman's Grave, issue 12 came out today. Yesterday. But anyways, that series has been great. So I'm all caught up on that. So I just got to read this last issue. I'm excited. I'm very excited to see how that one ends. It's been a great detective story through and through, and that's been a banger.
Also, and then we got Marvel, and there are quite a few titles that I wanted to highlight for Marvel this week. I know personally I'm going to continue reading Wolverine Black, White, and Red. Issue 2 comes out this week. Maybe, Doc, have you picked up the first one, or were you planning on it originally?
I don't know. I didn't.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. Even if it's only 3 issues, maybe I can do something on the end here, because in this, for the first issue of it, it was 3 small stories.
Right.
So then maybe I can talk to you about it a little bit more. Cause you know, we haven't done a Wolverine book at all. Right.
No, I don't think we have.
And we've probably read a lot of the same Wolverine stuff. So anyways, yeah. So there's that. Deadpool issue 9 is out this week as well. And I've been enjoying that for the most part. It's been a fun series. It's not this crazy, great, elaborate thing. Black Cat issue 1 is out this week for anybody who cares about Spider-Man. Taskmaster issue 2. If you want to learn more about that character, it's not too late to try and hop on that train. And then, of course, another King in Black spinoff, Doc, for you. King in Black, The Immortal Hulk, issue 1. I'm sure you're picking that one up. But also, you had was there a Star Wars book you had, too, come out?
Well, it's Star Wars Darth Vader number 8. So I still have to read issue 7. I was I went to the comic shop earlier in the on Saturday and picked up a month's worth of books. This one's in there, so I'll read that. And then I'll get issue 8 as well. And it's been a great series, so I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, and we also I can't announce it yet, but I just got an email from DC about another book that's going to be announced, but unfortunately it's embargoed till after we're recording this episode.
God damn it, DC, cucking TLDR, what are you doing?
Yes, I can tell you. I'll tell you about it afterwards, but I can't in the course of the show. So I apologize, but Doc, also with Marvel. One thing that popped up with all the Disney was it Disney Investor Day, which was never a thing before, as far as I know. I think it's just because of COVID and everything. But we found out that Christian Bale is going to be in the MCU. We're going to get Gore the God Butcher. And the second that this came out, you were tweeting about it. You were texting me about it because I'm just excited because he sounds like a cool character. He's a Thor enemy. It's Christian Bale. All this stuff is awesome. I don't know a ton about Gore the God Butcher because I don't read Thor, but you were able to connect the dots and how this could lead to more, like what else this could lead to for the MCU. Can you explain for our listeners who don't know much about this character?
So I don't know much about this character either. I had to go look it up, but one of the things that I came across when reading was he possesses all black, the Necrosword. And so 2 weeks ago when I discussed Donny Cates' Venom, we talked about the character Null. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions you asked me was, do you think, you know, he would, you know, do well in the Marvel Cinematic Universe or something to that effect? And I said, that would be awesome. He would be a great mid-boss, you know, maybe not the big bad because we think, you know, Galactus or whoever that might be, but he would be a great enemy on the way to getting to that big bad. And so when I saw this, well, if you're going to introduce, you know, Gore the God Butcher, and if he's in possession of, all black, the Necrosword, then that only leads me to believe that in some way, shape, or form, they have to have Null in the back of their mind. Maybe he's mentioned. Maybe he, if he makes an appearance in the next, you know, set of movies, you know, over the next decade or so, holy shit, I think that will be just fantastic because that Donny Cates Venom run is awesome. And maybe this is how they pull, you know, Venom into the MCU, right?
Which exactly.
I think would be great because I think they'll do a lot better job with that character than fucking Sony did. Not that it was a brutal movie, but it just...
Venom is a very important character to a lot of people. I like him. I don't love him like most, but he is a cool character nonetheless.
And it opens the door to bring in the character that I'm going to be talking about today.
Yes, it does. Before you say that, this connecting of the dots and how they can Null, as much as some might think, oh, well, if he's a Venom character, shouldn't Sony own him? He's fairly new.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't run into any issues. And whatever that switching of hands with Marvel and Spider-Man happens, if it does, or, you know, if Venom gets brought into the MCU, whatever, this is very much a seamless transition. So I don't if Venom doesn't exist in the MCU and is never gonna exist, or there's not gonna be an original Venom there, then you can just bring over Tom Hardy or maybe a different universe Venom and use Null in the course of all this. It's very much doable. So especially with multiverse stuff.
Right. And this is what makes the Doctor Strange movie so important. And now the Spider-Man movie, mm-hmm. right? Because we're seeing with the Spider-Man movie, I mean, some might say it's overkill. Who knows? We won't know until they actually, you know, put the movie out and whether they pull it off or not, right? But it opens the door, right? Yeah, so yeah. We're going to have all those Spider-Man. We're going to have all those Sony Spider-Man characters, Doc Ock and everyone in this next MCU movie with Spider-Man. So why stop there? You know, you can pull Tom Hardy and do Venom. But mm-hmm. what the Multiverse of Madness is going to do is it's going to just open up all these worlds and allow Marvel and the MCU to go down any number of roads.
Yeah. And like you said, it can bring in Venom, and then it can bring in the other character that you wanted to talk about today, which is who, Doc?
Today we are talking Marvel's Donny Cates' Absolute Carnage. So, I mean, we talk about just synergy on this show all the damn time. So this has been in the works for a couple of weeks. I actually thought about doing a Donny Cates trilogy. I was thinking about doing Venom, which I've done, Carnage, and then Silver Surfer, because all three of those, Silver Surfer Black, sorry, they're all in a singular story that Donny Cates is telling. And Null is involved in all of them. Right. So I had this idea of doing a trilogy, but then I was like, I don't know if I'll do Silver Surfer Black. I definitely want to do Venom. And I was going to do Venom and Carnage back to back. But then we had the Cullen Bunn interview and I wanted to mix in a Cullen Bunn book in between there. But Absolute Carnage, written by Donny Cates. Artist is Ryan Stegman. Colorist Frank Martin. Letterist Clayton Cowles. And inks by J.P. Mayer. And what I'll say about this book, Nick, is at first, I think I've told you before, I've always been a Venom guy over a Carnage guy.
And I'm the opposite, so that's why I'm really excited to hear about this.
That's part of the reason why I wanted to do this book, because I know you're a Carnage guy. And so when I picked up this book, it was in the midst of the War of the Realms event, which had every GD book tied into it. But I didn't grab it because of that. I was like, okay, I don't really know much about the character. I've never really read the character, but obviously know of him. This is supposed to be a big event. let me give this a go. And this is a classic case of Marvel overdoing, because you had the War of the Realms event going on, and then you had this Absolute Carnage event, which was also loosely tied into that. And then you had other books that were tied into this. So it was like tertiary fucking events going on here, all tying in. It just
so stupid. I mean, I know that I was reading Deadpool, because I always read Deadpool, and in the course of it, there's a War of the Realms tie-in, and then there's a Carnage tie-in, Absolute Carnage. I'm like, wait, why is he tying into both right now? And I thought about giving Absolute Carnage a shot, yeah. But I just the way they do stuff with their events is just so crazy.
You've got to be Russell Crowe from A Beautiful Mind, right, to put all this, you know, put all these books together. But
or Mac, right? Because isn't he the Russell Crowe of the DSG?
Is it? Yeah, he might. Oh, so throwing me off there, Friar.
Sorry, I couldn't help it.
That's okay.
I like to go off script.
So getting back on track. So I grabbed this because it had a lot of buzz around it, and because I was fairly unfamiliar with the character. I didn't know that it was directly, you know, tied into Donny Cates' Venom. I wasn't reading Venom at that time, obviously, but I grabbed this. And when I finished reading the series, like, okay, that was good. It wasn't great. I didn't have a lot of the background knowledge going into it, you know, and that happens. You get new readers sort of jumping on these events, and if they haven't read all the stuff prior, you can get a little lost. You might not appreciate it as much as you normally would, but I still enjoyed it. So then when I thought about doing this Donny Cates, you know, run I wanted to do here, I started reading Venom, and as soon as I was about 2-3 issues in, I said, oh, this changes things for me on how I looked originally at Carnage. And so I got all that background, and it made me appreciate this series that much better. All the more excited to reread it, and then keep continuing on with the Donny Cates' Venom run. And then we get this Marvel news with Gore the God Butcher, and I am just pants tent city, baby. So this was a 5-issue arc, and so this is not going to play well for the people listening, but you know, for the people watching,
yeah,
right here, I've got issue one. It's a thick bitch. This is an $8 issue, and it is there's a lot going on. There's chapters within the issue.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
So it.
And you just read the 5 issues, right? You didn't go and do all the other crazy stuff?
No, God, no. God, no. I just read the 5 issues, which you can read and enjoy the story. But I would also suggest, reading some of the Donny Cates stuff, leading up to it.
Like Venom, you mean?
The Venom, yeah. Because I think this, the Absolute Carnage run in the timeline with the Venom stuff is right around issue 16.
Okay. And so with Silver Surfer, is that mandatory too, would you say? Reading that, or that's separate and kind of,
yeah, it's not as much, because without reading the Donny, having an extensive knowledge of Null, you might get a little lost with Silver Surfer Black, but Silver Surfer Black is, that's a trippy ass book, man. We've had some, there's been some discussions within the DSG chat about the artwork in that book. I absolutely love the artwork because it's different, because it's trippy. Mm-hmm. I know it's not for everyone.
Yeah, it's not for me.
But it's just...
I'm also not a Silver Surfer guy, too. That's the other problem.
Yeah, I'm not a big Silver Surfer guy either, but it was the art. It was Donny Cates that pulled me in to this. And like I said, art is subjective just like anything else, but it was...
you're wrong, Doc. You're wrong about this.
What I will say, though, is that at times the artwork did kind of get in the way of the story. Because it's like sometimes it was a little too trippy, but that's not the book we're talking about today. But it's the first book is thick, and it does give you a little background issue. But it's directly tied into Venom, and this is a vicious, violent story because you're dealing with Cletus Cassidy as Carnage, and he is a sick son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
And the premise of this book is that Cletus Cassidy has been he's back as Carnage, as part of this cult bringing him back. And his purpose is to awaken a god. That god is Null.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that so in order to do that, he has to collect these codices. So anyone that has ever been affected by the symbiote, whoever, anyone who has ever worn the symbiote suit,
okay,
is now infected is not the word. They've been infused. Their DNA has been infused with these codexes.
Mm-hmm.
Cassidy needs these codex, you know, these codices, in order to awaken Null. And to do that, he's got to go on a killing spree.
Stop hitting your desk for the love of God.
Oh, man. Sorry. I'm not used to the mic.
Yeah. Okay. But so, all right. So I can see how this could create some serious problems in the course of everything, though. So is he willingly doing all this, or was it forced upon him? And is Carnage compelled to do this, or is Cletus Cassidy deciding to do this himself?
A little from column A, a little from column B.
Okay. Got it.
But there is, sorry about hitting the deck. I've got the new
mic. Let it go. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
But, you know, so anyone that's worn, you know, is at play. Spider-Man is at play. Right?
Oh, you're right. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I'm not going to get into the other characters, but anyone that has ever, like I said, anyone that has ever worn that symbiote suit is now a target of Carnage and Cletus Cassidy. And he's got this, and Carnage now has this ability to affect anyone that he wants to join his hive. So he can call up an army of Carnages to attack. And what's insane about this book is that he doesn't hold back, and he is always one step ahead of Venom.
Okay, so every step of the way. Before you go any further, before you take another step, with Carnage, with Absolute Carnage, the artwork, we're dealing with Marvel, we're dealing with Disney. You say he's not holding back at all. To me, with Carnage, I'm asking this, and I'm reading the Wolverine series, and it is definitely violent. But to me, if Carnage isn't holding back, he's as vicious as anybody out there. It's going to get real graphic. Like, on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you say the violence is in this, 10 obviously being the most violent and probably a little too much?
I'm going to put it, yes, it's up there. 7, 8, it's high.
Okay.
I'm trying to pull there's a good visual there. I don't know if you can see it. It's not going to play well.
I get it. Yeah, with the face and everything.
On stream, and then I'm just going to show you, right, there's another great.
Oh, yeah, you know, that's cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool. But so the violence I saw with the other image, for sure.
Yeah, so it's right up there, man. And there's, you know, heads going, guts, everything. It's like I said, vicious is a great way to describe this book. And the story that is told within these five issues is great. And it ties right into the Venom run. And, man, there are characters in this book that you don't expect to see. And it pulls character. I mean, it is very much a direct extension off of Donny Cates' Venom. It's not like, oh, it's a tie-in and it's its own separate thing and it's only loosely tied in. No, it's its own separate thing, but also directly tied in as well. And the artwork is top-notch. The writing is top-notch. And if you're a Carnage guy, Nick, anyone that's a Carnage guy, I cannot recommend reading this enough. But I would also say, you know, if you can get your hands on volumes, you know, 1 and 2 of Donny Cates' Venom run, read that going into this.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you. Like, if someone is listening to us and they only have so much time, like, I like Venom, I like Carnage. These are two of the, like, Doc, you've done a great job selling these, and I want to read one of them, but I only have time to read one because I'm just so busy. It's the holidays, but I can fit one more book in my rotation. Would you say go with Venom because Carnage won't make sense, or just go with Carnage because it's better?
I would say go with Venom because reading Venom elevates Carnage. Like, so that was at the beginning when I said I had read Carnage without reading Venom, and it was good. It was a good story. I enjoyed it. But now having all of that info going into that, it just elevates it, you know, that much better. So it's not going to, you know, I don't want to ever like do that. I'm like, okay, well, if you want to do this, you have to read that. That's why I kind of wanted to do these two things, you know, back to back, and yeah, really give people, you know, that preface, because I really think if you're a Spider-Man fan, if you're a Venom fan, if you're a Carnage fan, you're going to want to read it anyways.
Okay. Right? Yeah.
It's that good. It's kind of why I wanted to do these two episodes in close proximity to each other. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, you know,
the only way you're going to be doing Marvel in such close proximity from
Marvel. Yeah, right. It was almost a three-peat, but
yeah, because you've done Venom, you've done Carnage, and then you've done Daredevil. Did you do another Marvel title?
Darth Vader.
I obviously counts, but I forget. Yeah.
But so this is, like I said, man, it's the violence factor is up there. And it's a lot of reds, a lot of blacks, as you imagine with the character, but just having Null in there, having Venom in there, having Carnage in there, and Spider-Man in there, as well as a host of others.
I don't want to know who, but yeah, when you say host of others, like, are we talking like other Marvel characters that we know?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, because I know there's like the whole Venomverse or the Venom, like they've done a bunch of different stuff with Venom. There's like Venomized or all these things.
Right.
So we're going to see other characters in here.
Sure are.
Okay.
And we're 20 weeks in, Nick. Can you believe that? 20 weeks in.
It's pretty crazy. That's right. Every episode is
a week. I got to get my board in the background. 17 weeks, spoiler free. We're just rolling along.
Good man. I almost got into it with the death metal stuff a little bit earlier, but you've been great. Yeah. You've been fine. Okay. Awesome. So is there anything else on Carnage that we should know?
No, I mean, Cletus Cassidy, I mean, as bad guys go, right? He's just Tap doesn't even begin to describe that guy. He's so far off the reservation. It's not even funny. But yeah, it's just good shit.
Do you like him? Do you like Woody Harrelson possibly playing that character down the line?
I think if anyone could pull it off, my only issue with Woody Harrelson is I think he's just a little too old, you know, at this point. Mm-hmm. But he's a hell of an actor, and he could definitely pull it off. But that would be my only issue. But I can't wait to see him, or just see the character in general on the big screen.
Yeah, you can't get too young with the character. I know you got to worry about that. Oh, right. You're going to do movies down the line and stuff. But I think like if you could just have, if it was just once that we're going to see him, or over the span of 10, well, maybe 10 years would be tough. You might be right, actually. He might be a little bit too old. I don't know how old Woody Harrelson is, but I think as an actor, I would love to see him take on.
As an actor and his chops, I think he could play the character brilliantly.
Yeah, I agree. Now, Doc will have another book that he's going to talk about in a little bit, because we are doing our trade issue. So that means Doc is going to talk about a book that I recommended for him in a prior issue of TLDR. It doesn't have to be from the last 10 necessarily. It doesn't have to be from 10 through 19. It could be from the first 9 that we did as well. So we'll see what he. I don't know which one you're going with. We share a Google Doc, and he leaves like these teases in there, and they're all like just from famous franchises. Like, I'm gonna figure it out. I really thought you were trying to tell me when you texted.
No, nonsense, pure nonsense.
And I have one as well that I will get to after, but first I want to get to a series that I've talked about on, or I've at least mentioned on Change My Mind, because when that show started, this book was still ongoing. It's a DC book, DC Rebirth book. And eventually carried into the DC universe when they stepped away from Rebirth. But this was one of my absolute favorites. Actually, no, this was probably I thought this was the best Rebirth book that we got. And without further ado, Deathstroke Rebirth. This is written by Christopher Priest. And he dealt with quite a few different artists in all this, Doc. But the number one guy was Carlo Pagulin. I swear to God, when I was getting ready before, I read it in my head, and I felt like I was going to have an easier time saying his name. But Carlo Pagulin, and then Colors, Jeremy Cox, I believe was on it the entire time, if not the majority of the time. And then same goes for Letters, which were by Willie Schubert. Now, for me, Deathstroke's a character that was always It was cool. Like he has a cool look and everything. I actually just went out and bought the Deathstroke Arkham series from McFarlane, and I didn't play the game, but I love Deathstroke, and this obviously looks badass, right? Yeah. But I've always felt like I thought he was cool, but he was a little bit clunkier for me, as much as that's a clunky outfit from the Arkham series. But then in this series, my guy at the Toy Vault, Eddie's Toy Box, people who follow him on Twitter or on Instagram, he recommended the series to me, I think when it was two trades in and like right before the third one came out. I hadn't been reading it. I was reading Red Hood, and he says, you know, you should give Deathstroke a try. And all he had to do was show me the cover. And I was like, I'm sold. I'm in. Because this is friggin' badass. For that first trade, I was like, I'm all set. And that's why I highlight Carlo Pagulin first, because this is his artwork, and his art was outstanding in this series. I think he's extremely impressive. And I hated when, don't get me wrong, the other artists were good. They didn't deter me from continuing forward with reading Deathstroke, but I would have liked to just see him throughout the whole series. But this ran for 50 issues, Doc. So to have the same artist for 50 issues is obviously a long time, but this is the one book that, like, if I'm going to recommend a DC book to somebody, especially if we're talking Rebirth, but even then, just in general, let's keep it to Rebirth for now, because there's Batman Hush and all these different things. DC Rebirth, if you're going to pick up a book from that whole era, you pick up Deathstroke. 1,000%. It was absolutely the best. Christopher Priest might be my favorite writer out there. He's definitely top five. I love this series. Anything that he writes, he did some stuff for Death Metal, and I knew right away when it was him. He has a very distinct way of writing, and at first it might throw you off a little bit because there's some jumping around. Then he uses he'll take a panel and tell you, like, he gives it like a subhead, I guess. Like it's like kind of like a chapter, but also not, because he'll go from one, we'll call it chapter for now, to another. Then he'll go back to the first one. Then he'll go to the second one. Then like in the end, they kind of just converge on one spot sometimes.
Okay.
So it can get confusing, but I really liked how he did it. It just at first was like, wait a second, because I was just wasn't, you know, if you're not used to him, it's just going to throw you off. But the arcs, because again, 50 issues, the arcs, and I believe I have them all in this. So the first one is The Professional. Then you get The Gospel of Slade, Twilight, Deathstroke Defiance, Batman versus Deathstroke, which is the fifth time they've gone toe-to-toe in comics, Deathstroke Arkham, and RIP. There's also there was a crossover with the Titans, and that if you want to read those issues now, those are under the Titans trade. I believe it's the fifth one, but it's the Lazarus Contract. I believe it's the fifth one. I might be a little off on that. But either way, Titans, Lazarus Contract, you can get that like on Amazon or whatever. But I really enjoyed all of those. Deathstroke Defiance was fine. It was definitely the one weak point throughout the entire arc. I didn't dislike it, but I didn't love it. I felt like it was a real, like, with this series, we're dealing with Deathstroke and seeing him more as a father than we've ever seen him before, because he has kids. He has Jericho, who we start to learn a little bit more about. He has the other son, who was the original Ravager, who dealt with Titans, you know, back in the day. And then we have his daughter, Rose Wilson, who also goes by Ravager. And I am totally here for Rose Wilson. She's a badass. We see her a little bit more in Deceased. They did that Deceased Killables. Her and Red Hood have a whole thing going. I love that. I'm all about her. Jericho, again, a character I don't entirely love, but for the purpose that he serves throughout this series, there are moments where he really helps the development of Slade Wilson. God, I have my Wilson's mercenary shirt on right now. I'm confused. But anyways, I really the development of Deathstroke and how it's solely focused on him. We see how his mind works and how maniacal. And look, Batman, right? Crazy planner and everything like that. Absolutely. But seeing what Slade Wilson can do, it's like, holy shit. Like, he's right there with Batman. It is crazy. This guy is playing Chinese checkers while everybody's just like playing tiddlywinks. So I love this character. He in this series, and then I read the New 52 as well, and I believe Tyler Kirkham did at least the cover art for that. I'm pretty sure he did the majority of that art for that series. But I read that as well, and this character has become one of my absolute favorites in DC too because of all that.
So my only, of course, I'm familiar with the character, but my only real knowledge of him came from the show Arrow.
No.
And And so I've never read any Deathstroke, and I really didn't like his character all that much on the show. I mean, I stopped watching the show after season three anyways, but I tried getting into Rebirth. I think this was right around the time where I started to get back into comic books after, you know, not reading them or picking them up for a very long time. And, you know, I got Batman Rebirth, Superman Rebirth, and it just wasn't my cup of tea. So I stopped, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't dive in. But this definitely sounds like something I'd like to go back and check out, because I would like to know more about this character. You know, same thing with Constantine, right? I didn't really know much about Constantine, and I went back and read that book, and then all of a sudden I've got this, you know, massive appreciation for the character. I want to know more about it. And so I don't want, you know, that version of Deathstroke to sort of hinder me from, mm-hmm. you know, the character, because it sounds like an absolute badass. It's just, you know, and then, you know, I never saw Suicide Squad, so I don't know how Will Smith's portrayal of him was.
Oh, that's Deadshot, so you're good.
Oh, Deadshot. Okay, so see, look, I'm just getting them all mixed up there. So I definitely think I'll go back and check this one out, because I really don't know much about the character at all.
I've been waiting on talking about this one for a while. You know, you would think, oh, we'll start off with books that we love right away. But I had some that I wanted to hold on to and wait till the show kept going. Deathstroke is – I know Constantine City Demons is the first – that's the first book I pretty much recommend to anybody, especially if you like the character slightly. If you like comics and you want a little bit of darkness, that City of Demons, go pick it up. And don't hesitate. Don't think about it. Trust me. It is awesome. With Deathstroke, but with at the same time, you bring up Rebirth, right? There was I don't know if it was Constantine or if it was under Hellblazer. I think it was under Hellblazer, because sometimes, you know, they mix it up a little bit. The Rebirth John Constantine run, I would not recommend that to you. I would not recommend that to most people. I read it all. I liked it. It was fine. But look, I know enough, like, okay, there are certain things that I just like. A lot of bad things that I still like. But then there are a lot of good things that, like, I know this was a banger. And yeah. Deathstroke Rebirth 1000% is the one from that run, from all of Rebirth. If you pick it up, if you're picking one up, it's Deathstroke 1000%. I say that over Red Hood. I like Red Hood. I obviously, he's my guy. And I think prior to it becoming like the DC universe, when it switched over to that, I think that Red Hood was still a good series, and don't get me wrong, it wasn't bad at the end, but just I've complained about it enough on here. Deathstroke, all 50 issues, awesome, kicked ass, 1000% recommend to anybody, and whatever you know from the show, throw it out the window. Like, yeah. that's not what we're dealing with here. That's not who this character is. They don't do him justice in that. And I didn't watch all of Arrow because there's a lot of lulls in that show.
Yeah.
But I didn't hate Deathstroke there, but I like him way more now. And the look that he has, I kind of glossed over, but the look that he has in this series, when they came out with DC Collectibles action figure for Deathstroke right away, I was like, I need this right away. I texted him, like when this comes out, I need it, because this is I like the Arkham Knight look, and I like just Deathstroke's look in general, but the Rebirth Deathstroke look is the definitive one for me. He looks badass. Right. He's got sleeve and everything, all that stuff. And with DC and Marvel characters, that stuff is way more important than any of the indie books. That's more about the story. But with this, 1000%. Yeah, I love it.
Was this the only? It sounds like it's the only Rebirth book that was worth a damn.
Well, I don't think Red Hood was worthless. I really don't. I think that when it becomes Red Hood Outlaw, I think the first arc where Batwoman gets thrown into the mix. As much as I wasn't a huge fan of Pete Wood's art, I thought that run was pretty fun. I would have liked to see him and Batwoman do a little more, because they don't get along. And you also don't have that threat of, at least I didn't think you did, have the threat of them turning into a romantic thing, because Batwoman is a lesbian. So I was like, okay, that's kind of taken out the door. I like that. Like, now we don't have to worry about the romance stuff. It's just a guy and a girl working together. They don't really love each other, but they're kind of part of the same family. After that, there are some bright spots, but that's when it kind of starts to slow down. Like, you get all the stuff with like Lex Luthor and what's going, like all the it was the year of the villain, all that stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't read that event. Like,
I didn't either.
But like you get the tie-ins with that, and I didn't particularly love what was going on there, especially when it came to Red Hood, like the what is it, a Generation Outlaw. He's training like these next the next age of villains or whatever. Yeah. I'm all set with that. I don't like the characters, the artwork there. Like that was one of the first times I really got annoyed with somebody's artwork. It's like because there was like an inconsistency with the character and how his face looked. I'm like, how does this happen? Like, yeah. Again, you got a lot of shit going on, but this is what you're supposed to be doing. Like, this is it's not acceptable. And I love Red Hood. So just like whatever it is, figure it out. Like, make a decision on how you want to do it. But from start to finish, yeah, I would say that this was this is definitely the best one. There's no question about it. Like it's definitely top five books from the big two for me, 1,000%.
Awesome, 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 awesome. Good shit. I'm gonna have to check that out because I don't know much about the character at all. And I think I told you the other day, I said, I think for the first time in my life, I am more heavily DC than Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the comics and the characters and what they're doing. So this is definitely what I'm gonna have to check out.
Good. And one last note, the final arc of it all is pretty weird. Actually, the last two arcs, this isn't really spoiling anything because if you guys look it up and if you get into it, you have Arkham and then RIP, both very weird. And I like that, like how the Batman versus Deathstroke was really good. It was different. Like when you get to Deathstroke Defiance, I do think you have to read it for all the other stuff. Yeah, you have to read it for all the other stuff. It's definitely the weak point of the run. The first three trades, they come out and they're absolute bangers. Deathstroke Defiance, I didn't love it. The next three that follow, and obviously Lazarus Contract's in there. I forget the timeline where that fits in. But those are the three, Batman versus Deathstroke, Arkham, RIP, all worth powering through Deathstroke Defiance if you're like me and didn't exactly love it. But
awesome. Awesome.
Anyways, awesome. You said you're excited for more DC stuff than ever, which I love hearing that because the books are better. I mean, Keith has said it too. The DC books are better than the Marvel books. It's not even a question. I'm curious what you have planned for the book that you're going to look back on that I've talked to you about before.
You want to take a guess?
So I know you had four that you were picking between, and I did not look at the list of the books that I've discussed over the past few months, but I know Deadpool Kills Marvel Universe could be in the mix. What I should have done is just looked at the pictures that you put up on our Instagram because it's got to be in those. Is it in those?
So
it was in those. Yeah. Okay.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
Oh, dang it! So you threw everybody off the scent. All right. Yeah. All right. I am gonna go with Mortal Kombat X.
So when you talked about this book, I knew immediately it was going to be the book that I was going to do. I did throw a couple others in there because it's like, Mortal Kombat was one of them. It's not the book I'm doing. Sarah. I almost did Sarah. And,
which I knew you'd read.
And Undiscovered Country. But the book that I chose was Aphrodite 9.
Oh, you did!
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
That's awesome. I am so... Oh, okay, tell me.
This book is fucking fantastic. I'm more excited to talk about this book than I was Absolute Carnage. And I loved Absolute Carnage.
Yes!
I flew through this. I think I was texting you over the weekend. I was like, I flew through, both trades. And
you read them both already?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Read them both, man. This is... This was something else. And what was great about this book is that I kept thinking about it well after the fact, not just for the purpose of the show, but just the way it was written and the story that was told. So Aphrodite 9 was written by Matt Hawkins, art by Stepan Sejic, who we love. We've talked about him a couple of times. He did the Harleen book. He's a tremendous artist. And man, does he really show off the buns on Aphrodite 9.
Yes, he does.
Which was tremendous. And the letters by Troy Petrie or Terry. I don't know how to pronounce that.
Terry.
Terry. But so this was just – if you love sci-fi, this book is a must-read. It is just sci-fi at its best. And as you talked about when you did your review, it's a world with these two – warring civilizations. You have the Spiros, which are your again, it's a hard time. It's because they're not quite cyborgs, but they're sort of mechanically enhanced. They're a mechanically enhanced And then you've got the Genesis or the Gens, and they're sort of like this. Again, not mutants, but their DNA has sort of mutated over time, and they're more.
You can call mutants and cyborgs. I mean, like the cyborgs are not entirely cyborgs, sure, but they're like that step between like cyberpunk and cyborg.
Yeah, and they fucking hate each other.
Oh my god,
they've been warring for so long, and you've got the Gens. They're more. Religious in their beliefs, and you got the cyborgs that just want to live, forever. You know, the immortality, is their goal, and they it starts off with a bang. You know, there's constant battles going on in this book, and during one of these battles in the beginning is when you get introduced to the title character Aphrodite Nine, who, you don't know a lot about her at first, but what I love about this book, Nick, and I don't want to spoil anything.
Of course.
But there's two characters that are discovered during this battle: Aphrodite Nine and I believe the other guy is Marcus, right? Or Birch.
Birch, yes.
Right. And what I constantly kept thinking about with this book is that I don't know how you read it, but I'm trying to remember how you read it. But when I was reading it, you very clearly hated one side.
Yes.
You were favored and loved the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all dependent.
You mean, are you talking about between the Spiros and the Gens?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Right. And so between Aphrodite Nine and Birch, one side gets one character, one side gets the other character.
Mm.
And for me, that was what determined which side I liked versus which side I didn't like. And what I was thinking about this book was it was just sheer luck on which side, got which one of these characters. And had that flipped, would I have been rooting, right? So, you know what I mean? So I
didn't even think about it like that. Right? I didn't even think about
and
it
so
like
because
that.
Because you read all 11 issues, right? And you're for me, very... very, very much on the side of this faction, of this civilization. And you absolutely loathe and detest the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking once I was done reading it, would my feelings have changed had the characters flipped?
Mm-hmm. So that's wow. See, and that's what's so awesome about a good book too, is you can get it, Doc, and I don't look at stuff that way usually. Like I remember with The Walking Dead with the show, right? Everybody's like, oh, well, now we're kind of starting to see that, Rick's group, the Atlanta group, they're not really that great of people. They're kind of awful and all this stuff, but we're siding with them because we've been with them the entire time.
Yeah.
And I'm never good about that when it comes to stories. Like, I can dissect a character and really get into all that and all the detail with them, but I didn't necessarily do that as much with Aphrodite Nine in this, but like what you're talking about, like there's so much other stuff at play, but that is definitely a huge theme in this, like, or something that people should walk away from. I never did after reading those.
Yeah. Cause I was like, well, what my feeling of this group had changed, because make no mistake about it, it's not like this faction, and their beliefs are, this much more, malicious than this group and their beliefs. No, they just both fucking hate each other, right? It's not like one's on the side of good and one's on the side of evil. It's just two completely different civilizations with two completely ideologies, and they just hate each other. But you root for one versus the other based on, these two characters that got pull. And so, had that switched, would my feelings have changed? And to me, that just it blew my mind a bit. And then, just the character of Aphrodite Nine herself and the world that was sort of created, which she's fucking badass. And I know you joked earlier about like the artwork, she's a very, very attractive character, but with that aside, she can fucking fight, man. She's just, she's as badass as a character as it gets.
Can you believe this has not been turned into a movie or probably not a show, but a movie?
So I was thinking the opposite, actually, because I was thinking about because I knew we'd probably talk about that on the show today. And so I'm like, OK, yeah, definitely make it a movie. And if you were just doing it off these two books here. Yeah. But what I started thinking about was the world that's created here, you know. And with all the other, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's such a great world that has been created here that you could make this a TV show. Like season one could be just these two, you know,
we're stories. Not even focused on,
or season one could be volume one, season two could be volume two. And then the world that's created, you could just keep going and you wouldn't necessarily have to stick to the source material because there are other books. There's Aphrodite, I think
five,
whatever. Right. So,
yeah.
Right. And so there's this entire universe here and they've created, you know, that you could just go off in all these different places and you could make a great sci-fi show off this. Mm-hmm. And the other characters that you're introduced, you know, I think would all make great TV characters. This could easily be a 4-5 season show of, you know, 8 or 10 episodes each. And yeah, I'd watch the hell out of it.
I wouldn't make him. I'm not big on, like, Wes obviously can be very particular. He's made that very clear on Change My Mind that he, like, if it's streaming and stuff, I don't want more than 8 episodes. 6 episodes works too. I'm generally not that particular, but with some of these indie like stories, I do kind of get that way because I think that they're awesome stories, and I think part of what makes them so good is that they come to an end. There's a finality, and I want people to be able to experience that in another medium too, and be able to enjoy it similarly to how you and I do when we're reading the comics. Because if you go too far, I get worried. But you're right; there is a whole other world. Maybe what they could do is you turn it into the Aphrodite stuff is its own world. You make it into a movie, and then you could also do a show if you wanted to as well, just about the Jens and the Spiros. People of Spiral City, and just like have it focused on that, and that could be a couple seasons or whatever, and you have whatever you want to do with it. You could just be like, this all predates Aphrodite 9. Boom.
And it's perfect. It's just because you can go anywhere with it, mm-hmm. right? And that's the simplicity of it, and the greatness of it is that the simplicity of it is you've got two civilizations that hate each other and they fight. And you can have great battles, and you can tell great stories, and you can make a great show just off that alone. But then, you know, Aphrodite and the Aphrodite, you know, the all that Aphrodite stuff, you know, which I don't want to spoil anything. You could weave that in, or you could make that its own movie and have it tie into the show. You know, you could make that its own show. This is a great property.
Yeah,
and it's shocking
they've done nothing with it over the years.
I know, and I know that you said that you liked Volume One a little bit more. So
yes, that was my next question.
Volume Two, I felt the same way, but Volume Two was still great. I loved how it ended. It got a little bit more into the, you know, religious-y stuff there with the Jens. That wasn't so much of a turnoff for me, but it was like, you know. But with that said, great series. Volume One was definitely a lot more on the action. Volume Two was a lot more on the storytelling. But you put those two together, and I'm so glad I read it, man, because I flew through this.
I'm so glad you did too. Yeah, I thought that was one of my one I've been dying to talk about as well, because that first reading the first trade, it's just like, holy shit.
Yeah. Yes.
Where got any more of that Aphrodite 9? Oh my god, that was so good. It was so good. I'm so glad you liked it. And again, that's not like when I see, I'd have to really think about, like, this is not something we're going to cover in the annual, but like if I had to think about the top 5 books I would recommend to just anybody that likes comics, Aphrodite 9 would at least be up for consideration.
Very much so. And I would say if you're just talking sci-fi stuff, hands down, as a sci-fi book, as a sci-fi story, this is top notch.
Yeah, it really is. They need to, I mean, if they wanted to try and bring it back, and now you can't bring it back and do stuff new. Pick up where you left off though, because you can definitely do more stuff with it. Someone get Hawkins on that stuff. Yeah. All right, so Doc, it's time for it's my turn. Do you have a guess for which book that I picked out?
I have a feeling you do Mercy, but I'm not 100%.
Okay. So you know that I had been itching to read Archangel 8.
Yep.
And I picked that up before we even did an episode on it. And that's kind of why you moved it up a little bit quicker than you were originally planning. I have read that and I liked it. Maybe I'll talk about it more another time. I did pick up Killadelphia, which I may pick up, may read at some point soon. Yeah. I'm very excited for that. But Doc, you do know me. You are correct. I did end up picking out Mercy as my book.
So, I had a feeling you gave it away a little bit at the beginning.
Did I?
I can tell by the look on your face. I think you did Mercy.
Well, that was it's kind of a little tease. I figured, okay, maybe you'll pick up that bread from maybe not. So I'll tell you what. I read this and there's six issues in this. By the fourth issue, like it's all I enjoy the entire series. The art, awesome. Mirka Andolfo, for those who forget, she did all the artwork on this. She did all the writing on this. I think the only thing that she doesn't do is the lettering, which I'm correct. It's Fabio Amelia does the lettering. Other than that, and she has some other people that help out with the coloring. But like this is all her. This is her baby. And wow. I forgot about that in the course of reading all this, it's so high quality. And the cover doc, honestly, with oh my god, why am I drawing a blank on her name? Lady Helena. Like that. Jesus, I don't know why I have a tough time there. I know we have Lady Swanson. I know her, but what I was trying to say before is the first two issues is good. It starts off, you know, with pretty crazy and everything like that. But what was good about this book is I was getting confused, but in a good way throughout the course of all this. And this is an example of a book that up until now, I would not have picked this up on my own necessarily. I wasn't like a big Mirka Andolfo fan. I probably had seen some of her stuff, but hadn't necessarily looked into it a ton, but I wouldn't probably have picked this up on my own, but now knowing you put your gold stamp on it, all right, so I want to read this. It sounds like you sold it pretty well, and we had talked about it a little while back during Dorktober. So I'm going through this like, okay, issue one's good, issue two's good. Three, I think it got a little bit like turned up a little more, if I remember correctly. And then four, it was just like, holy crap, what the hell just happened? And then by the end of that, it's just forget it. Yeah. All the way to the end, it is batshit bananas crazy from four to six. Holy crap! So I liked Lady Helene. That's what
Helene,
it was.
Yeah, that's Helene. Yeah,
Lady Helene is an awesome character. Lady Swanson, obviously, you know, we get her purpose and all this too. But Goodwill, obviously, is. I'll hold back my opinions on Goodwill for now. Like you can probably figure them out, Doc. But for the people who haven't read it. And there's a lot of other interesting characters and twists and turns along the way. But I'm reading this and I just don't know exactly what to expect throughout it all. And I'm getting that. So I had this set of expectations because you built it up, and it's like, okay, all right, it's good. Well, I'm like, and it's and obviously there's violence and a bit of other craziness. But man, when she turns it up, she turns the knob up to like 11 and rips it off. Like seriously.
Yeah,
it was awesome. So I'm very glad that you talked about this book.
Yeah, and it's one of the more beautiful. Even though it's the art gets vicious at points, it's probably right up there. That and Die, they're some of the most beautifully drawn books that I've read. I mean, her artwork is outstanding,
and colors are amazing.
And I love the Victorian era setting of it. The characters are great. I want to know if you kind of felt the same way in terms of like maybe it could have been five issues instead of six.
Okay, so that might be the case. Maybe with the first two you would have done that with, but even then it's like we're learning a lot and they're kind of setting the table and helping with some things. So that was kind of that was important in all of it too. But to me, the other thing was that we're what was it with. I'm sorry. You said Victorian era, and with the like when you said that, I'm thinking that this was taking place in Britain, and that definitely threw me off a little bit early on too, because this is set in America.
So that right. Use that as like that's so when I say Victorian era, I think of Victorian era England. That's for me the best way to sort of describe it to give people a visual.
Right, but this is like it takes place in Washington, but it feels like it could have been anywhere in the 1800s. But yeah, like that but that's a me thing, Doc. That's not a you thing that got thrown off by this. Maybe you could have taken one issue out of this, but I still really enjoyed it. To me, and like you said with Aphrodite 9, when we started talking about this book on the show, I was like, this is the one I'm going to read. This is absolutely, there's no questions asked. This is the one that I'm going to do. And I might have even given my hand away before we did the trade issue. Like, I think I told you I was leaning towards it or I had picked it up. And it's I can't contain it because I really want to read this book because I'm so impressed that Mirka Andolfo did all of this other than the lettering by herself. And the lettering too, like we that's something we don't talk a whole hell of a lot about with the lettering, especially in the, for a cover, like you and I have talked about it outside of the show, how with a cover, it can really make or break it. I personally don't, which we both don't like a ton of lettering on covers usually, but sometimes, like with Mercy, actually with the cover, it's awesome. Like but in the book, what Fabio Emilia does is very important how he letters everything. And I thought he did a really good job with all that too. It's a small thing that maybe you don't think of initially, but it really helps.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm glad you picked it up because I love this book. This book was our good friend Freddie had talked about this book on Indie Alley when they were still doing that show. And so I picked up the first issue and I was hooked. And then what I did was I think I read the first issue, but I didn't move on to the second issue until I had picked them all up. And then because I had been reading all the books and it kind of got shuffled down. And then I read them all at once and I go, yes, yes. And I think, I got caught up. The last issue came out, right around October or so. But I'm glad you picked it, man, because like I said, the artwork is beautiful. The storytelling's great and it's different. Right. Mm-hmm. It's different. And so I'm glad that I've been able to recommend to you two books that you never would have read otherwise that you've read and absolutely love.
Yeah, you've done that in both cases. And that's where I don't know if I'm going to continue doing that, but it is interesting that that's the theme that I've taken so far where you've done two. No, Aphrodite 9 doesn't fall under the same umbrella as Constantine. That one's a little different. But I've looked at two books that I would never have ever thought of trying whatsoever, and wouldn't maybe thought not been my thing. And I've absolutely loved them. It's really like this show, and this is why we do the trades. This show has helped me change a little bit as a reader, and I've really enjoyed being able to experience that and try all these different things out. Like Sarah, obviously is a strong female led story, and I would have absolutely read that anyways because I talk about TKO a lot on the show because I like what they're doing. Garth Ennis is obviously awesome, and it just seemed like a cool premise what they were doing. And obviously you've read it and you can maybe talk about it down the line, but a really good book. And again, we talk about the five that I would recommend for everybody. Sarah's probably up there. So anyways, these two books now, I love to see what Mirka Andolfo is going to do next. We'll leave it at that. Yeah. But I think that Image, I mean, look, right now you talk about Boomaton. I've been talking more about TKO, and obviously I've done, I think, three episodes on TKO books, if not four, I think, so far to this point out of our 20. And I do like what they're doing, but Image, I mean, like, you've got to respect they're the big guns. Like, they are number two, or I'm sorry, they are number one when it comes to indie books. They always have, like, I know they have a ton of stuff and like they try and flood with you as much as they can, but they got some real bangers in there still. They got a lot more more bangers than anybody else, I would say, of the indies. Yes.
And they've been and they've been around, for what, 30 years now?
Right? Yeah, it's like 30 years.
Yeah.
And people start to see them more pop up like in specials, whether it's like sci-fi stuff or when Robert Kirkman did his History of Comics, which I got to find a way to go back and rewatch that. If anybody knows how to go find that, like stream it somewhere, please let me know on Twitter. Like I would love to be able to go watch that. I love that. And I would love to see that again. It's been a year. It's been 2 years at least since that comment came out. So yeah, so that was, so Mercy and Aphrodite 9 are the ones that we went back and decided.
Two strong female characters, huh?
Yeah, gotta love it. Absolutely. Yeah. So now as we head into as we look towards like next week and everything like that, one thing regarding Change My Mind, I do know that we said we were going to review Wonder Woman for next episode, which would be episode 97. That's not going to be the case because we thought it was getting a theatrical release before HBO, not the same time. We got it. Wes and I made a mistake. Just so you guys know, so we will have something else planned for you. Also, before Doc talks about what he has going on, we will have – keep your eyes peeled on Twitter, because we have something fun that we'll be posting probably around the day that this episode drops, which we usually do that on Friday, of course, with the live streams on Wednesday. But keep your eyes peeled for that. And, of course, we have the Instagram page now where we're trying to share as much art as we can. And if you guys ever have stuff that you want us to highlight on there artwork-wise, feel free to shoot us a DM or whatever, because we're always looking for cool stuff aside from highlighting our books and the other shows and the DSG and anything else cool that we haven't talked about at this point.
Yeah, and so Billy and I, Dem Pineapple Boys, will be going live tomorrow night at 8:30, episode 5. We'll be talking about the episode 9 live. So it's one of our favorites from season 1, so that's going to be a fun one.
That will be on Thursday for those who are listening, if you're listening to the audio version afterwards or whatever, and you'll be able to find that audio version on PCP. I don't know when Billy uploads that stuff.
Billy typically will do it on Fridays, but last week it was delayed a bit because we had to move our show to Friday night.
Okay. Okay. There you go. That's right. That's right. It was on Friday. So keep your eyes peeled for all that stuff too. I really enjoy – I don't watch the show. I haven't been going back and watching it. I just like listening to you two talk, and it's just – like you guys – like Psych fans, I never knew this was like a thing, but Psych fans, it seems like, are like very, very loyal to that show.
Oh, yeah,
very,
the Psychos. They're a strong bunch.
Very passionate people, and they've liked what you guys are doing, and I've enjoyed it too, just you two going back and forth. So appreciate I highly you. Recommend that to everybody. And so next week we will have – so in 2 weeks we will have our annual, which will be very different. We're not going to be going over a new book in that week. Next week we will be going over a new book. We're going to do a holiday special for you guys though. Very excited for that. Until then, Doc, stay sexy.
You know it.